today on the Beginner Photography Podcast.
And my best images and the ones that the families liked the most were the ones where I wasn't asking the two-year-old to listen to me. And I was just photographing the moments in front of me. Gosh. And I was like, this is what I want to do. This is it. Signed. This is all I want to do for the rest of my life.
Welcome to the Beginner Photography Podcast. Today, we're interviewing Rachel Greiman, photographer and copywriter at greenchairstories.com, to learn about the importance of the words that we put on our website. So let's get into it.
Welcome to the Beginner Photography Podcast, a weekly podcast for those who believe that moments matter most and that a beautiful photo is more than just a sum of its settings. A show for those who want to do more with the gear they have to take better photos today. And now, your host, Raymond Hatfield.
Hey, welcome back, my photo friends. Look at you. You are here once again. You showed up. You are ready to learn. I'm so ready for this. I'm so thankful for you. This week is going to be a great episode. As I said earlier, it is with Rachel Greiman of Green Chair Stories. She's a photographer, but also a very talented copywriter, which is something that's pretty unique because in the world of photography, not many of us are very good with words. That's why we chose more of a visual medium. But Rachel is a great combination of, you know, combining photography and the words that she has. Is now doing copywriting for photographers because she's realized that some of us are just terrible at it and we need some help. So this is going to be a fun episode because not only, are we going to learn a lot about Rachel's journey into photography, and there's a lot of things. She's actually a family documentary photographer. So she like goes into people's houses and just does like a day in the life type session. So we get into a lot of that and, dive deep there. Really interesting stuff before we get into some of the hard stuff, which I let Rachel rip apart my website. I send her my website. She goes through the words and she tells me, you know, what I'm doing right, which is not very many things, and what I'm doing wrong, which is quite a bit. So I know that if you have a website, you're going to be able to, you know, take the knowledge that you hear today and then apply that to your own website as well. It's going to give you, you know, just like a good base, because in a world where everybody's photos look good these days and, you know, the average family or wedding client doesn't really know the difference between maybe photography styles or good and great photography, we're kind of chosen by the words on our website. You know, so it's arguably one of the most important things. So I allow Rachel to do that, and again, rip apart my website and give me some insight as far as what things I could be doing better. Now, these changes I'm going to be making ASAP into my website, and I will keep you updated, let you know how that goes. But before we get into the interview itself, I wanted to share something really fun and interesting with you real quick. And that is, right now, I am in the middle of editing a wedding. So last weekend, I went down to Kansas City to shoot a wedding. Beautiful wedding. It was a couple who, well, originally, you know, they planned their wedding to be this like 300 guest epic. They were supposed to get married in October of 2020. So they contacted me and booked me to be their wedding photographer back in, I guess it was August of 2019, you know, not knowing what was going to happen to the world and, you know, have a pandemic. So there was a lot of back and forth as far as, you know, what was going to happen. They had to postpone their wedding date. Obviously they moved it around. They changed locations. Lots of things happened, but ultimately they settled on this past weekend in Kansas City. And I got to say it was much smaller than, you know, the 300 guest epic that, that they had originally planned for. I believe there was just 12 people, but it was so beautiful. It was so much fun because, you know, a lot of times at weddings, couples feel like a lot of pressure to make sure that they talk to everybody and, you know, give them some time and attention, which is fine. And that's great. You know, you want to appreciate the people who came to celebrate with you. But there's a totally different feeling when the entire wedding is so small that you're not spending your entire day just greeting people and talking to them, but actually enjoying your wedding day itself. So it was a wonderful wedding. But now I am in the middle of editing this wedding and I get to relive those moments, which is always fun. I love this part of editing, but it reminded me of pretty much my first wedding, you know, the first wedding that I ever shot solo, and I had to edit it myself. And it took me more than a month to edit that wedding. And I remember thinking to myself, I want to do this like every weekend. I can't be taking a month to edit photo. Like, I'm going to be so backed up so quickly. But part of the issue was that, you know, at the time I didn't have a style. I wasn't super familiar with Lightroom. So every photo I had to go in and tweak settings individually. And, you know, ultimately, you know, I look back on those photos today and think, what was I thinking? You know, I should have had a better understanding of how Lightroom worked and how editing worked as well. So when I started the Beginner Photography Podcast, I wanted to create some resources to help you, you know, new photographers in your photography journey. And that's one place where I started, and that is with Lightroom presets. So I know that, you know, you look on the internet, there's presets everywhere. We're used to going on, you know, Instagram, clicking a button on a preset, and then your photo is magically transformed. But in the world of professional photography, presets are, they're different, right? Presets aren't meant to be a one click and done solution. They are meant to give you a base. So still to this day, I use a preset that I've created for myself that is more or less my signature that I put on my photos. My photos are about 97% of the way done in camera. And then that last 3% is the preset that puts my signature on the photos. But for new photographers, I have created 52 free Lightroom presets for you to download so that not only can you, you know, get creative ideas as far as what can be done with your photos, but also speed up your editing workflow. Because we didn't get into photography because we like spending time in front of the computer and editing. We got into photography because we like shooting. We like getting out there. We like taking pictures with our cameras. So these presets are designed to not only speed up your workflow, but, you know, obviously, well, yeah, speed up your workflow and get you out so that you can continue to shoot more. They give you a great base. So it's a lot of fun, and it's really helped shape my style of photography. So I want to invite you to download them for yourself. You know, like I said, I want to give them to you absolutely free, and you can download them at freephotographypresets.com, which I'm going to put the link to that in the show notes as well if you are driving. But again, if you are at a computer, if you're on your phone, just head to freephotographypresets.com, and you can sign up for your 52 free Lightroom presets. Speed up your editing, get more creative, and unlock the full potential of the photos that you have already taken yourself. So that's it. I know that you're really going to enjoy them. Also, I share an instructional video on how to not only install them, but how to get started with presets and how to use them effectively. So again, lots of stuff, totally free. I want you to have it. Enjoy. Okay, so with that, let's go ahead and get on into this week's interview with Rachel Greiman. Rachel, today you are a documentary family photographer. You go into people's homes, you photograph them in their quote unquote most, you know, mundane yet sacred moments of their family life, of growing their family, of just being a family. Before you kind of got to where you are now, I love to start off with just like, you know, when was the first time that you knew that photography was going to play a large role in your life? Hey, Raymond here. If you're sometimes baffled by which camera settings to use, then I've got just the thing for you. My free guide, Picture Perfect Camera Settings. It's a fantastic starting point for anybody eager to understand the basics of camera settings in various shooting scenarios. And it's tailored to beginners who want to get out of auto mode, providing clear, easy-to-follow suggestions on where to start with your settings. So whether you're capturing a stunning landscape or a family portrait, Picture Perfect Camera Settings will help you to get off of automatic mode and explore the possibilities your camera offers. Remember, mastering photography settings is a journey, and this guide is your first step and the perfect resource to guide you towards finding the right settings for your style. So grab your copy today at perfectcamerasettings.com and start your journey to better photos.
That's a great question. I think there were several like kind of milestones in my life that led me to that, but I think the initial one was I was in high school and I was the yearbook photographer because my mom always had cameras laying around growing up. There's five kids in my family. I'm one of five. And she photographed every sport. I mean, we were all athletes. And so she was at every game with her camera. And it was like the most exciting day when her film came back because, you know, I'm old. And I just loved getting those rolls of film back. And even if there were only three good photos in it, it was like, oh, you nailed it, Mom. And it was
that was a good roll. Three good photos.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And she always gave away all the photos to like other kids on the teams. And they loved having photos of themselves. And so I think from a really young age, I just saw how powerful, like just giving someone a good photo of themselves can be, doing something that they love. And then, so I was like, I needed to do some extracurriculars in high school. So I was like, oh, I'll be the yearbook photographer. I've always played around with my mom's camera. And then when I was a senior, my mom bought a digital camera, and it was like the first SLR I ever held. And I bullied her into it for sure. I was like, because then I can use it for my yearbook images and I don't have to develop them by hand in the dark room. And so I took every photo class that my high school offered and did all of my developing in the dark room. And then I got the digital, and I was just like, this is phenomenal. This is, you know, the wave of the future. And then I ended up being a photojournalism major in college because I loved that. I didn't really love anything besides writing and my experience in yearbook in high school. And so I just took both of those, and I was like, photojournalism sounds great. It's the only two things I liked about academics. And truthfully, I picked my college because they had a very successful soccer team. And so that's why I went there. And then when I found out that I could major in that, it just opened up this whole world of like career possibility for me. And again, I'm old. Digital wasn't really a thing yet. Like, it wasn't accessible to college students. So we learned everything on film, and everything was in the dark room. And just kind of learning that process of photography was really exciting to me. And that eventually channeled into what I do now with families.
Did that feel like a step back from you, from shooting on film, getting that digital camera from your mom, and then having to go back to film when in college?
Not really a step back, more just like, it was actually a really good lesson in privilege for me, because my parents could have afforded to give me a digital camera, and being with everybody else in my major, it was like, oh, this isn't a common thing. Not everybody can just go out and spend. It was probably like several thousand dollars for those nice DSLRs that were coming out in 2005. And honestly, I loved the dark room. I loved spending time in there. You know, I'm not a big person on alone time or quiet time. I'm a huge extrovert, but it felt like one of the only spaces that I felt really comfortable with silence and being alone.
Oh, wow. I've never heard it explained that way. I love that. So I do want to go back, though, to those earlier days, because there was kind of a jump there from my mom took pictures of us playing sports to, you know what? I'm going to go to college for this.
Yeah.
You know? So when you first started playing around with your camera, or with your mom's camera, I'm assuming that it was a point and shoot. Is that right?
The digital
like one? First, like in the beginning when you were a kid, you know, going to sports games. It was also an SLR?
She always had like interchangeable lenses. She always had nice gear. That was something she always invested in. And she just really took a lot of pride in being able to create like some of the only really nice photos that somebody wouldn't have to pay a professional for. She was a hobbyist for sure, but she also did just a really nice job.
Okay. So then when you would take that camera from your mom and you would go out and take photos for yourself, what was the hardest part? Like, what was the learning curve like from you? Because, you know, most film cameras, now correct me if I'm wrong, but most film cameras, at least, you know, back in the day, were mostly full manual. I'm not sure if hers had like automatic modes. Could you kind of explain that to me?
I'm trying to remember. When I was in like middle school and would fool around with the camera, she didn't even have autofocus.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, so it was full manual. Full manual.
Yeah. So then let's stay there. Let's stay there. So when you're taking photos, how did you figure out, you know, what was going to be kind of an accurate exposure so that you didn't waste, you know, $15 on a roll of film?
I think she taught me metering.
Okay.
Like, I think she taught me to like get it and get the light meter in the right spot. Or I should say, what is it? Bracketing? Is that what it's called? I'm like going back into the depths. Find the light meter in the center and then take one image on either end of it.
Oh, yes. I gotcha.
And so is that bracketing? I can't remember. yes, I have a degree in photography. But I think she taught me that. But then by the time I was in high school, it was a much higher tech camera because by then she was like really trying to create, you know, stronger images, and she was sick of wasting money on film. So I think she had like upped her gear. But then I remember the camera she gave me in high school to use in all my classes was that full manual, like really difficult to know what you're doing camera, but everybody in my class had that. Sure. So, and that's exactly what our photo teacher was teaching us how to use. So he was the one that really taught me the mechanics of it.
So when you were out and you were photographing yourself, let's say middle school, let's go back to middle school. Is there a photo that you can think of maybe in your head that stands out as something that was really powerful to you that kind of solidified that maybe this is the direction that I want to go?
Probably not from middle school. That was probably just for fun. But there are several from high school that I remember being like I remember we had to do a lesson on like movement and trying to capture somebody and blurring the background, but keeping them in focus the whole time.
Oh yeah.
And I took a picture of my sister's boyfriend, like sliding across our laundry room on a chair. And I nailed it. Like he was like perfectly in focus and the whole background was blurred. And I remember getting it out in the dark room and being like, oh, I crushed this.
Yeah.
Like this turned out so great. And I remember thinking, oh, how cool that you can really create a whole world in a photograph that's true and realistic and still documentary or photojournalistic in nature, but it still is like, it's an effect, you know?
Right.
So that image sticks out to me. And I think when I started photographing for yearbook and I would go to games and I could get some, like I could get some without any blur or without any movement, like in the middle of a soccer game, I always felt really, really proud of those images because it was like, usually you're looking back at the yearbook photos and they're not great from high school students.
Yeah.
But, and mine were not all great either. But I do remember being really proud of the sports images I took, probably because that's what my mom did. So I was like, oh, I can be like my mom in this area.
Uh-huh. Okay. So then when let's go back to the, you know, photojournalism side. So now you're in college, you're learning as much as you can about just how to document what's going around and telling a story, you know, with your camera. Was the goal at that point to work for a newspaper or was it to, you know, document families? And I guess, how did you get to where you are today?
Yeah. So I loved telling stories always. I've always loved that. I've always loved writing. I have always loved interviewing people and hearing kind of their background. That's really interesting to me. And I picked photojournalism because I felt like there were jobs there. Like I didn't want to be a fine art photography major because I was like, what do you do with that? I don't get that. But I was like, oh, I could work for a newspaper or I could do this. And I volunteered at a lot of nonprofits throughout college. And I always photographed and told the stories of those, the people that we served or the people that I worked with. And then that became my career path for a long time. I worked in nonprofits after college and I was always the writer and photographer at the various nonprofits. And that is really where my photojournalism degree got put to the best use, I think. And then, so I worked at probably four different nonprofits doing writing and photography. And then in 2014, I had people from my church actually start asking me to take pictures of their families. And I noticed that I really, really liked all the images where I wasn't posing anyone. I was really bad at posing people and I still am. I'm really bad at it. And I'm woman enough to admit it. And my best images and the ones that the families liked the most were the ones where I wasn't asking the 2-year-old to listen to me. And I was just photographing the moments in front of me. And then I found Kirsten Lewis, who I call the godmother of documentary family photography. She basically invented the genre. And I saw a class on Creative Live that she taught where she did like a 72-hour session with the family.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, this is what I want to do. This is it. I like done, signed. This is all I want to do for the rest of my life. And so I slowly started transitioning out of my full-time job and I started my business and then I started doing documentary family. And it was really all the same elements of telling stories at nonprofits and telling stories of, you know, my subjects and assignments in college, just geared toward families.
Hey, Raymond here, and we are going to get back to today's show in just a moment. You know, one comment that I hear often from new photographers is that they want to use their photography to give back by charging affordable prices. Now, I love the nobility of the Beginner Photography Podcast community for that. But quickly, I see those same photographers saying, you know, that they feel burnt out in photography just a few months later. How can you give back when you yourself are burnt out? You can't. Now, photography is not a necessity, and therefore, by definition, photography is a luxury. When you realize that and you start charging and bringing in more money consistently, well, imagine how much more of an impact you can make on your community. Let me show you the step-by-step roadmap, absolutely free. This is how I can help make an impact. You can head over to firstphotoclient.com and download my free guide that has everything that you need to start charging for your work and get your first photo client. Now, again, that is firstphotoclient.com. Start making an impact by this weekend. Now, let's get back to today's interview. That is incredible. I love to hear that story. And I think that a lot of the listeners are going to resonate with that a lot as well, because we all kind of get some sort of education in photography. I take that back. Some people just, you know, go to Costco, buy the camera. Now, where do I start? Right.
Yeah.
I understand that. But there's also a large portion of people who started, you know, maybe a few years ago. They were interested in photography. It kind of gets to this point, and now they're like, I could leave my job. Like, maybe I could do something with this. You know, and that's what you did, and you've obviously had success now, which is wonderful to hear. So again, I know that listeners are going to really appreciate your take on that. So let's talk about when you did decide to do that, right? So you jumped all in. You already had the education in photojournalism. Mm-hmm. So you kind of got, I hate to say, a head start there, but when we think back to our earliest images, it's typically just like, oh, these are garbage, right? But when you already have a little bit of that education there, maybe it's not so far. So I would love to know if you had to think back to maybe that first family session that you did, right? What's something that sticks out to you as oh my gosh, I would never do that today?
Well, I mean, like, the whole thing was posed, so I would never do that now.
Yeah. Okay. I see. So hold on. Well, then why did you take that approach? What if you went through photojournalism, you knew, like, let's capture the story here, you know, let's not interfere. Why did you decide I'm going to switch things up and just go around, I know nothing about, and pose these people?
Yeah. Well, when people from my church asked me to take photos of them, they just knew that I was a photographer for a nonprofit. Like, they just knew that was my job. And I told them, I've never shot a family before in my life. Like, I've only ever done photojournalism. I did not know that documentary family photography existed then, probably for the first year of my business. So I literally probably went on Pinterest and looked at, I'm sure that I did that,
right,
went on Pinterest and looked at images of, like, what family photographers do, because I had no idea. And I told them, like, up front, they probably paid me $50, if they even paid me at all, for that session. And I was, like, just emulating everything that I saw. Nothing was, or nothing felt original. But even in that session, I remember the images I shared were ones that were not posed, and because they were the only ones that I really liked. And so I even from the first sessions, I could feel a draw toward that. I just didn't know it was a thing. I didn't know that. I just assumed everybody wanted to go to a park or a field and have images of themselves and their kids on their best day in their best clothes.
Right.
And now I would never do that. I would never do any of it, but it was valuable to, it wasn't, I think that style of photography is valuable. I am just not the person to do it because I'm not good at it.
Of course. Of course. And I think the listeners understand that. You know, we've talked about this many times. I fully understand that. You know, I interview pet photographers. I'm not going to photograph pets. That's not the thing. You know?
I can't even take pictures of my own dog.
So, yeah, I mean, I absolutely get that. So where you're at today, I would love to hear in your own words what elements go in to one of your photographs. Like, what does it take for you to, like, put your name on this and say, this one's a keeper?
There are two ways to bring home more money with your photography business. You either get more clients or you spend less of the money that you make. CloudSpot Studio helps you keep more of what you earn. With the lowest payment processing fees in the industry, the average photographer will save $300 annually. And that's just more money to invest in essential gear like a new flash or a sweet camera bag. You know, one that is perfect for storing all of the wedding day snacks that you can pack. But it's not just about savings. CloudSpot Studio is designed to streamline your workflow. Easily organize shoots, send contracts, questionnaires, invoices, and you're really going to enjoy the hassle-free payments. So sign up for a free CloudSpot account at deliverphotos.com. And as a bonus, you're going to get access to my exclusive wedding and portrait contracts and questionnaires at no additional cost. Why let fees chip away at your profits? Empower your photo journey with CloudSpot and watch your business soar.
That's a great question. I mean, when I spend 12 hours with a family, which is, I haven't done in over a year because of COVID. But when I have in the past, over the past few years, I'm getting hundreds of images throughout the day. I mean, I'll fill up 232 gig cards. And I don't even know if that's accurate. I haven't done it in so long.
Sounds right.
Just like we'll hundreds of images.
Yeah.
And so like the first cull is usually going through and just getting rid of all the crap ones that are like not salvageable, too dark. Because if you think about it, if in a house, you're changing lighting scenarios every time you rotate.
Yeah.
So, I mean, on a wedding day too, but like usually on a wedding day, if you're outside, you can keep your settings pretty much the same. But in a house by a window is a lot different than when you turn around to get the other kid in the dark kitchen. So there's a lot of just have to be scrapped images that I was moving too quick and didn't change my settings in time. But to put my stamp of approval on an image, there usually has to be an action happening. Like it can't just be like, I have plenty of like a cute face that they're making at the camera, but it usually has to have an action of some sort. Like they have to be picking their nose or picking a wedgie or eating something or yelling. I love having at least two subjects in the frame, whether that's a pet or a dog or a toy that they're playing with. It's just so much more interesting if there's more than just a pretty photo of a kid, because I can take a pretty photo of a kid with my eyes closed. It's just so much more interesting and unique and tells such a stronger story if there's actually something happening in the image.
So how do you, what's the balance there between not wanting to create something versus just documenting what's happening?
You don't have to create something if there's kids involved. You just don't. If you're there long enough, they will show you something weird. Kirsten always says that kids are weird, and they are. They're so weird. And and if you reward the weird behavior with the click of a shutter, they'll do it seven more times. So like if they jump off of it and you giggle and take a photo, they're going to be like, she liked that. I'm going to do that again.
Sure.
And so it's, I just am so rarely ever having to fabricate anything. And I don't like, I never ask them. At every family session, I will have them pose for a family portrait.
Sure.
But that's like 30 seconds.
Yeah, yeah. So what's the – this might be more of the customer service or the business side of things. But obviously that sort of behavior is probably not what parents think of as good behavior for, you know, a photo shoot. So how do you kind of deal with that communication with your clients so that they understand that that's okay?
Well, people don't inquire with me unless that's what they want. And that is like total positioning in the way I talk about photography and what I show. I will never, ever show. And this is the most valuable thing I learned at the beginning of my business was never, ever show anything that you don't want to photograph. Because what you show is the quickest way to tell people how you shoot. So if you don't want to pose people, never put a posed image on your feed or on your website or on Facebook. You don't want to draw attention to things you're not going to shoot, because that sets your customers up for disappointment and unmet expectations. So for me, when people inquire with me, my process when I tell them what happens, I always say pajamas to pajamas from the time your kids wake up in the morning till the time they go to bed. That's when I'm there. And I will just document everything that you do. And I always say, I will pull you guys aside in a calm moment when everybody's in a good mood to get a family portrait, but I will only do it once. Mm-hmm. So if you want more than that, I'm not the girl for you. And I typically send them a slideshow or a full gallery of somebody else's session. That way they can see kind of the lay of the land. Like, these are the images you're getting. There's going to be double chins. There's going to be kids picking their noses. You know, there's going to be gross eating pictures because it's funny. And if they want that, then great. But, you know, marketing 101, I'm not for everybody. I know that 90% of moms don't want those kind of images, but the 10% who do are the ones that I'm here for.
Yeah. I hope everybody listening right now rewinds and listens to that whole thing again. You know, it is so powerful. I'm sure that when you were doing that first session and you looked at Pinterest and found all those images and you tried it and maybe you nailed it and you're like, this is a great photo. Still, like, don't put that on your website. Like, don't do that if that's not something that you want to do. And that kind of, it's kind of a strange segue, but I want to segue now into websites, because not only are you a photographer documenting families, but you also do copywriting for photographers. So you deal with the words on people's website. And as somebody who's like really bad with words myself, that's why I just talk to people rather than, you know, send them an interview questions. Can you tell me, did that stem from your photojournalism class?
100%. Mm-hmm. It stemmed probably more. So photojournalism led me to nonprofits and storytelling in that genre. And then nonprofits led me to family photography. You know, they were each kind of a stepping stone into one another. And when I got into all these photography Facebook groups, because I did that first session and looked up all the Pinterest things, and I was like, all right, I got to learn what family photography is like if I'm going to give this a go. So I got into all those Facebook groups. You know, it was like Restart, Jasmine Starr's old Facebook group so long ago, and like Rising Tide Society, like all of those, you know, beginner groups. And I kept seeing people ask questions about their websites, and they would post little excerpts that they wrote, and I would just automatically in my head edit it. And then I was like intimidated because I was the newbie. So I didn't want to be commenting on things as the new person. But then I was like, wait a second, you've done this for a decade. Like, this is what you're trained to do, is to write. So I was like, okay, if this is how I can contribute to this group, so I don't feel guilty asking a bunch of questions, that's totally what I'll do. So I just started helping people in Facebook comments in these groups edit their sites. And this was like back in 2014, probably. And eventually people were like, can I pay you to write this? And I was like, yeah, sure. And again, like, I did not get paid well for those first few sites, which is probably a good thing because I didn't know what I was doing. Yeah. I am a writer for sure. And I was a copywriter for nonprofits, but writing to fundraise for a rescue mission is a lot different than writing to sell photography services.
Sure.
So, but that was kind of how I got my start there. And then I became very interested in both. So my business was both, is both, and has been for a really long time now.
Oh my gosh, doing both. I was just going to say, I can't imagine that. But I guess I'm kind of doing the same thing with a podcast. And
yeah, you are doing exactly the same thing.
So what were the sort of things that people were talking about in Facebook groups? Like, what were they posting from their website into these Facebook groups that made you think like, oh my gosh, like these people need help? Like, what were some of those common mistakes?
It was almost exclusively about pages that people would post in there. And it's so funny to think about it now, because my first offering was writing somebody's home and about page. And I would never do that now that I've like studied copywriting and taken all the courses and things like that. But because that was what people were so focused on. And now I know that like their experience and pricing page is just as important as their about page, if not more. Yeah. But a lot of the mistakes I saw on that about page was, just talking so much about themselves, you know, and though people really do want to know the person behind the lens, they ultimately want to know how your experience as a photographer and as a human serves them, or, and every copywriter will say this phrase, but you want to build the like, know, and trust factor. You want people to like you, you want people to know you, and you want people to trust you. And you should do that throughout your whole site, but on your about page, it's the most straightforward way to build that factor. So if you've done your research, like everyone should before they write their copy, you should have figured out not only what your people are going to like about you, but what they like about themselves and their interests. And then you kind of find the Venn diagram of where your interests and their interests meet. And that where they meet is that's where the what goes on your about page. And a lot of people like to talk about, like, I love tacos and iced coffee. And it's my personal mission in life to be like, hey, you are more interesting than the food that you eat. So, like, find something new. And it's not, there's nothing wrong with it. I just think, I always tell people to picture this. Picture somebody looking at your website and having 10 tabs open of other photographers. Mm-hmm. What can you put on your tab that's going to make people say, I want to know more? It's probably not tacos and margs or iced coffee and cookies or whatever. not that you can't have those things. You just have to show way more personality than that.
Sure, sure. Okay, so this is where this is going to get fun, because when you reached out and were like, hey, I think, I can help out listeners of the podcast, I was like, okay, let's see, let's give them some actionable tips on exactly how to do that. So rather than you just telling us what to do, because, you know, sometimes I get lost, sometimes, you know, people like, I don't know, barbecue and brews or, you know, whatever it is. Instead,
hey, barbecue would be a step up from tacos. Everybody talks about tacos.
Good. But I challenged you with ripping apart my own personal website. So that is exactly what we're going to do right now. So you have my website. You have it up. And which, if anybody's listening right now, it's just rhatfieldphotography.com. And I think you're going to hear some of the changes that I'm going to make after this. But as far as my website goes, I will tell you that I would say the homepage and my About Me are probably the two that I think that I need the most help with. But I'm also not, I don't specialize in copywriting. So I would love to hear your process. What's the first thing that you look for when you're on my website? Or what's the first thing that's standing out to you?
If you would have inquired with me, you would have told me what you don't like about your website. Okay. So what do you think is the problem here? Like the biggest problem?
Oh man. Honestly, I feel like I'm too informative. I really want to help and give all the information to my couples as possible. And therefore it's just word vomit that comes out and it's not very coherent.
Mm-hmm.
How does that sound?
I think that you are right on track with that.
Oh really? Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's good. I am assuming that you get a lot of inquiries from Google because this site seems very SEO heavy.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Is that right? Okay.
Yeah.
I would challenge you. I don't think you need this much SEO driven copy. I think you could probably get away with less and still rank exactly where you are. Hmm. Now, disclaimer, I am not an SEO expert. but I always challenge people, play around with your SEO to see how little you can get away with and stay where you are. Because I would argue that most of your SEO hits come from blog posts, not your web copy. 100%. So you could really, really tone down the in-text copy that says Indianapolis wedding photographer.
You know what? I had not thought of that. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, most of my traffic does come from the blog posts that I have created rather than people just coming straight to the homepage. So what you're saying is why put all that SEO-focused copy on the homepage if people are finding me from blog posts and they're going to get here anyway?
For sure.
Wonderful.
For sure.
Okay.
I also would challenge you, again, not a designer, but there are so many beautiful templates that you can buy that lean more toward the age. I don't know what age range your couples are in.
About 25 to 38.
Yeah. So those 25-year-olds, this is going to look old school to them. Probably not the 38-year-olds. Uh-huh. But as your clients skew younger and younger, you're going to want a template that feels younger. Okay. So that's just something to keep in mind. I actually have a list of resources of where you can buy cheap templates that are beautiful. Wonderful. And I can send it to you. So the first thing you have on here is about you. That's like number one mistake. If you had inquired with me, that would be what I would say in my response. Like, hey, even if you don't hire me, you need to change this first paragraph. Uh-huh. And this is fine to have as your second section, but your first section on your homepage, you want to jump into the conversation that the reader is having in their head. So let's think about your favorite couple that you've ever photographed. What's their name?
Alex and Sam.
Right off the top of your head.
Yeah.
So you want this website to be a love letter to Alex and Sam. Uh-huh. Because I am not all about avatars. Most copywriters are. So you want to think about what Alex and Sam were thinking when they landed on your site. Where did they come from? What did they know about you? What problem or struggle or frustration were they facing in their life when they got here? And that first paragraph that they read needs to feel like you know exactly who they are. So what would you, so let's answer one of those questions. When Alex and Sam came to you, were they talking to a lot of other photographers?
No. So they're kind of an exception to the rule. I do once a year like a $99 engagement session deal, right?
Yeah.
And then so I did that and then I booked their wedding after the fact. So I don't know how many wedding photographers that they were talking to, and they didn't. Yeah. They landed on my site through a Facebook ad.
But even if they just connected with you, what did you connect with about them? What did you like about them?
What did I like about them? They were very comfortable with each other. They weren't too serious about each other. They both came from large families, and there just seemed to be this – they just made me feel like a part of their family, like being together. Like it didn't feel like I was the stranger or that I was the third wheel here.
Yeah.
Does that answer your question?
Yes. So one of the things in this long headline that you have here is without being stuck in front of the camera all day. Mm-hmm. And so that would be a great thing to pull out for whatever new headline you create in this first section that's going to be about them. You can say something in that paragraph about how, you know, your wedding isn't just about you two. It's about celebrating your love with the people that brought you here. And I'm not going to stick you in front of the camera all day. This isn't a photo shoot. This is an experience for you. So just kind of pulling on those values of the people you like working with. If you like working with people who want a big party and who want to have their families involved, that is so unique. That's not everybody, especially in a post-COVID world. I can't tell you how many people that have hired us pivoted to elopements. So if you are one of the photographers that is all about the 200-person wedding, then that's the people you need to be writing to. So rather than come up with this avatar that like shops at Anthropology and her name is Samantha and, you know, whatever, all of those things, just use Alex and Sam and be like, this is who I'm writing my site to, because more people like Alex and Sam exist. Right. In the world. So if you write to them, you're going to get more people like them.
So as somebody who I would say that I'm not the best with words, you know, so trying to formulate these ideas don't come very naturally to me. So I think that, you know, it's really helping by like you asking these questions to me, like, what is it that I like about them? But I guess I hadn't even thought about focusing on like larger weddings, larger parties. And I guess maybe this isn't copy related, but would I change the images on my website? Because right now, pretty much all of them here on the homepage are just portraits.
I think a lot of them should be, because it is still about the couple. Like the day is still like about them and their relationship. But I absolutely, like you have some in your slideshow of a big church with a big audience. Mm-hmm. Like even that subtle messaging of like, I shoot bigger weddings is good. So I would add like a couple of them, or like dance floor images where people are having a really good time together. I also would just, these wedding planning tips way at the bottom.
Way at the bottom. Okay.
Yeah. Because people are going to know that you're helpful. They're also not coming to your homepage first.
Okay. Gotcha. That's a good point. I guess I only did that because Squarespace is garbage when it comes to like blogging. And I built pretty much a whole blog based on this. So
yes.
all the way at the bottom still lets them get access to it, but yeah. that's not why yep. they're on my homepage.
That's not why they're on your homepage. You want okay. really clear, not distracting design and sections mm-hmm. That kind of go, and like, this is kind of a template, but like paragraph about them and then how you're right for them. In like this section, you have the "Hi, I'm Raymond." That's yeah. the second one. That can be about you, leads to your about page. So rather than click here for the complete Indiana wedding planning guide, this would be a button that would click to your about page where they can learn more about you. Then another section that kind of highlights your experience. And I would add, instead of a kind words page, I would make that an experience page where you lay out 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You explain why it's great to work with you. And then you give them the steps and process of how to work with you and kind of laying out why it's great. And then kind words, those should just be everywhere. You should have a testimonial on every single page of your site.
Right.
I always say that the copy you write is best proven by a testimonial that reaffirms it. So another copywriting hack is going through your testimonials and seeing themes and words and phrases that come up over and over and over again, mm-hmm. because that's what people love working with you, why people love working with you. So if you write your copy based on those things, you're always going to have a testimonial to back up the claim you just made about yourself.
Gotcha. And that's social proof.
Yes. So yes. it's like, don't take it from me. Take it from yeah. these people that loved working with me.
Okay. Oh, those are great tips. I'm definitely going to take down the kind words and replace that with experiences. Okay, so back to the homepage here.
Yeah.
Instead of the not bolded, but the larger font of the "Hi, I'm Raymond, a wedding photographer for Indiana mm-hmm. couples who want fun, relaxed, and timeless photos without being stuck in front of a camera all day." That should go second.
Uh-huh.
That should be the second paragraph. Should I just leave that pretty much word for word, or does that get changed? Does it need more personality?
I mean, yes,
seems kind of boring to me.
It can always use more personality. "Hi, I'm Raymond" is a very bland opening.
Sure.
I always say pick the most interesting thing and put it in your headline, because the point of a headline is just to move people down the page. It's just to get people's attention, to have them read the paragraph. So this feels like a very informational headline. You want to just have something really, really interesting. Mm-hmm. So I would pick out something like, "We can do this. Let's go to your about page," because I feel like I had something to say there.
Okay.
You had something here mm-hmm. that I was like, "I listen to Kesha more than I should probably admit." That's a yeah. great headline.
Okay.
And it's like hidden, because it's like, who's this guy that listens to Kesha?
Yeah.
Like, why? Yeah. So like, you pick the most interesting or polarizing or thing that you've written, and you make that your headline.
Okay. So then let's see if we can kind of flesh this out here. So first paragraph on the homepage, mm-hmm. Talks about, how my couples will want, to gather everybody who they love, and it's a celebration of their love and all of that fun stuff. Second paragraph is "Hi, I'm Raymond." Maybe not that, but "I listen to Kesha far more than I should probably admit, and I'm a wedding photographer for Indiana couples."
Or "I met my wife on Craigslist."
Uh-huh.
That is a great lead in.
Okay.
You don't even have to say "Hi, I'm Raymond." You can just have a headline that says, "I met my wife on Craigslist." And then in the body copy, you can say, "Before you get creeped out, it was totally whatever uh-huh. the story is." And then you can say, "I'm Raymond, and I want to tell your love story, which hopefully is a little less creepy than meeting on Craigslist," or something like that.
See, that's like, great. See, I always feel so forced when I'm told to like put in personality. It feels so weird, I guess, possibly because just my natural instinct is to just give the information, like lay out the mm-hmm. facts, like just give this.
And don't think about information. Think about mm-hmm. stories.
Stories.
So people are captured and captivated by stories. That's why you all have jobs as photographers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, probably don't use the word storyteller, because everybody does. But if you tell stories about who you are and about how you work and about who they are, if you paint pictures with your words and like think about being at a cocktail party and talking about what you do for a living, how mm-hmm. would you engage someone with a story? That's what your website should feel like. That's why I say it should be a love letter to your favorite couple, because however you engaged them to get them to hire you after that shoot is exactly why they would have booked you if they read that on your site.
Mm. Okay. Okay. And how, I guess, is there some sort of line on how personal we should be, or is this more of a feeling? Because I've seen it all. I've been shooting since I was 5 years old, and I've also seen some like things to where I've thought to myself, this shouldn't be shared.
Yeah.
Like, this doesn't help anybody.
I would probably veer away from like trauma stories, because mm-hmm. I definitely think, especially in the younger generation, I think they're a little bit more open. And so some of that might be a gray area, but people don't need to know your whole life history. They need to know what applies to them and what mm-hmm. makes their life better. Okay. And just like what makes you fun, you know, what makes you different? Like, you listening to Kesha as a father of two is funny. Mm-hmm. So like, that's why I would say, keep it in. That's a funny thing about you.
Thanks.
I like it. Like, I always talk about how I am a walking guilty pleasure. Like, I don't mm-hmm. believe in guilty pleasures. I love The Bachelor. I love mm-hmm. chocolate chip cookies for breakfast. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not going to apologize for that. Mm-hmm. That's just part of who I am. So I would argue the same thing for everybody. Like, just talk about the things that you do that make you you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. Talk about the things that make me.
I know that I'm throwing so much at you. This is like a masterclass.
I know we're trying to go through this so quick. So then, I guess one last question here about this, which is, looking at my about page here.
Yeah.
Is it too long? Is it overwhelming? Should it be shorter than this? Because as you see at the bottom, I also wrapped in the frequently asked questions.
Yeah, well, which I think is fine. I would move the FAQ if you create that experience page. That's a great spot for FAQs. I also love the feature of like bolding your questions and then having the little plus sign next to it that can pop down the answer. So if it's not a question that they have, they don't have to read the answer.
Right, right.
Like, they get to, it's like choose your own adventure. So I love that feature. I think it's so important because it doesn't overwhelm people with this wall of text.
Yeah.
So I would just move that to your experience page and then add that feature and you're golden. Okay. And then I actually saw something in here that was really, I'm kind of an odd duck and I hope you are too. That is a great line of copy, and it is buried in your FAQ. Like, yes. That could be a headline anywhere. That could be your homepage headline leading into your about section. I'm kind of an odd duck, and I hope you are too, because it's about you and it's about them. So people who are an odd duck are going to go, same, bro. And then they're going to keep reading. So like, you have really good little snippets of copy like that. I would challenge you to read through your whole site and pull them out and see where you can organize them in interesting headlines.
Okay.
And you do have to be careful, because some headlines need to be SEO driven, but not all of them do.
Sure. And I was going to, I kind of had a question about that, you know, like, where is that line between having good copy and using SEO to get found? But it sounds to me like, I mean, as long as, I think we're kind of at this point now to where, like, obviously SEO is important, but like, really, you should probably also be advertising your business in other ways as well, and don't just rely on SEO. Mm-hmm. And since that's the case.
Yeah, I'm SEO a bad isn't. Person to ask, because I don't care about SEO. And I know that a lot of people do. And I don't want to like poo-poo on their parade. Mm-hmm. But for me, I've never needed SEO to grow my business. Mm-hmm. And I have been fine without it. And I know a lot of photographers who are fine without it. I also know a lot of photographers who are wildly successful with it. So if it is something that interests you, that mm-hmm. you're going to spend time on, that you're really going to work hard to get on page one or two, and that's mm-hmm. going to wildly benefit your business, then do it. If you don't want to do it, then you need to beef up your other referral networks, Instagram, Facebook, word of mouth referrals from past couples. Treat them like kings and queens for years after their wedding. Send them a print on their anniversary. Like, there are so many ways to get clients on your website, and SEO does not have to be one of them. You have done a lot of work. So for you, I would still pay attention to this. Mm-hmm. And I would be, because I'm assuming you rank pretty high for your keywords.
Not page one, but there's definitely
close.
a domain authority there. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So if you've already put a lot of work in and this is something that works for your business, I am not telling you to ignore SEO. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying I don't think it needs to be in every paragraph and every headline. And so I think you can probably peel back a little bit, but you would have to talk to an expert about what can go where.
Okay.
I always put it in the H1 headline on my homepage of websites that I write and in the first paragraph. And then I ignore it for the rest of
your,
the page.
Your main keyword, so like your location and the type of photographer that you are.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Or whatever word you're trying to rank for, because some people have very specific ones that they want to rank for.
Right.
And then your images, like the alt text should be, and the metadata should absolutely have every keyword you're trying for. And then your blog posts really, though, are the things that are going to get people to your sites. So I just don't, because I'm a website copywriter and not a content writer, I tend to say like, hey, stuff the crap out of it in your blog posts.
Yeah.
Get it out of my copy. It takes away all personality. But no. That's hilarious. Your About Me page, I have to say this because I care about you now, Raymond. Oh,
okay.
There's like 4 typos.
Oh my gosh. That's it? Wow.
No. Great. Just in the first headline.
Oh.
On the About page. I hate to burst your bubble there.
Terrible with words, Rachel. Yes.
So I hope you're ready for greatness. It's the wrong you're.
Oh, see, I'm always real good with that. That's embarrassing.
You said my wife and I meet on Craigslist, and I think you mean met. Never ending.
We still meet on Craigslist.
Never ending is either one word or hyphenated. I would have to look it up.
Okay.
And world's best nachos. World's needs to have an apostrophe S.
It's not the world's nachos; they're my nachos.
Right.
That's how I view. No, I appreciate that. I'm gonna. That's embarrassing. I'm gonna go in there and change.
It's not embarrassing, and literally everyone listening has a typo on their website, including me. There's too much content to not. As far as length on this, I would separate this into sections.
Right.
That way, like again, this is a wall of text, and that's a bad thing. You don't want to have something where people see I value experience, I'm not reading all of this, and then they just like check out. They're like, I can't do it. That's too much. Humans are lazy people, especially when it comes to reading text on a screen, and they're going to scroll, see how long it is, and then X out. So I would just pick out your most compelling pieces and then create sections.
Okay.
That way they have a choice to keep scrolling.
Right. I like that. I'm definitely going to go through here and fix a lot of those. So again, thank you so much for.
Yeah, you are so welcome.
So I guess one last question for you.
Yeah.
Home, about me, then experience, then pricing and contact.
Then pricing, then blog, then contact.
Okay, gotcha. So take out the kind words, replace that with experience. Gotcha.
That's
so
what I would do.
At the bottom of the about me page should be. See what it's like to work with me and go to an experience page. Love it. Okay. Rachel, I seriously cannot tell you how much I appreciate all that help that you just gave me, even though.
Oh my gosh,
you
know, literally anytime.
Embarrassing about, you know, I'm 33 years old. I should know when to use your and your, right? So,
be shocked at how many people get that one wrong. You're fine.
I get it. So thank you so much for again tearing this apart, because I know that, you know, with a lot of the things that you said, at least for me, I feel like I try to do things maybe in order, or I try to do things in a way that I'm told or whatever. So then I just do them, but then I almost never get any sort of feedback based on that.
Right.
It's just kind of like in this vacuum. So for you to just look at it kind of objectively and say like, well, I like this, or I don't like this, or you definitely got to get rid of this.
Yeah.
Really gives me a lot of clarity in what needs to happen here. And I know is going to, you know, I was going to say make myself look better, but also help my couples as well to kind of make that decision that, he's right for me or he's not right for me at all.
So your website copy isn't about booking clients as much as it is about booking better clients. Like I always tell people that I love when my work helps make people money. I love that. That is not my priority, though. My priority is to make your life better, and your life is better when you're working with the people you want to work with.
Oh, I love that's I feel like there's no better way to end it than that right there. That's like words of wisdom right there. That's going to be, a notable quote from this episode right here. So
great.
Rachel, I do have to say, thank you again for coming on, sharing everything that you did. And I mean, I'm still a little sore about the work that you did here on my website, but it's all wonderful stuff that I know is truly going to help me in the end. And we do have to take that look at it. But for those who are listening right now and thinking to themselves, like, man, I would love to get something like this done for me. Where can they learn more about you or copywriting for themselves or having you do it for them?
Yeah, I have a very updated blog. So people can get free content there. I have tons of posts about copywriting and ways to make your copy better. I have tons of posts on Instagram, more free content for you if you want. I have a do-it-yourself guide that you can buy on my website, greenchairstories.com. And it basically is a cheap guide that walks you through how to write your own website copy. It has a lot of the questions that I asked Raymond and kind of walks you through the things you need to be thinking about and the format to lay out your site to make it make sense to you and to bring clients in that you want to work with. And then on my website, there's also ways to work with me one-on-one if you want more information about that. And you can get a website audit, a much more extensive version of what I just did. So it's all on my website if you want to check it out.
I don't know if I could handle a more extensive version of what you did here today. I mean, you didn't hold back. You really went all in. And again, all I got to say is thank you so much for coming on, sharing everything that you did, helping me out in more ways than one, and providing just a ton of value to the listeners. So, Rachel, thank you so much. And I look forward to keeping up with you in the future.
Thank you so much for having me. This was so fun.
I got to say, that was so much fun. Very rarely do we get that level of interaction with a guest. Typically, when I interview somebody, I want to know as much as I can about them. And oftentimes, the attention isn't pointed towards me. But, when we were talking about my website or the things that needed changed, I got to tell you, it's hard to be on the other side of the microphone here, I guess you could say. And being the one who is being talked about or being discussed. So again, if you're a premium member and you listen to that, I would love to know what you are going to implement and put into your website, what things you're going to change. And if you're a free member, I would also love to hear from you as far as, Rachel's journey into photography and how she sees the world. What was really interesting was, talking about her family approach and being there to capture these photos. I mean, she's there for an entire day, And that is just so cool. Could you do something like that? It's interesting. I hear from many people, talking about wanting to do something like this. And that is, when it comes to talking with families, very rarely do they want to bring you into their house because they're always worried about, it's dirty and, who knows. We just know that we don't live like in a catalog house. Nobody lives in like a catalog house, and everybody's concerned that the photos are going to make them look like, trash or whatever. But if you go to the show notes of this episode and you look at some of Rachel's photos, you can see that like that's not the case at all. A lot of her photos are, in average homes, but she's able to produce just beautiful work and capture some really, really incredible moments. And, the testimonials that she has on her website as well are just, you can see that she really takes care of her clients and her clients really appreciate what she is able to document for them. So, again, with the copywriting, if you are interested, if you have a website, if you're thinking about starting a website, you're going to need an about page. Otherwise, people are just looking at photos, which they do all day on, Facebook or Instagram, wherever it is. You got to have something to stand out, and that's going to be the words on your website. So Rachel actually has a kind of a DIY copywriting course for photographers just like you available on her website. Compared to paying a copywriter, it's an incredible value. So you can go ahead and check that out. She has information at greenchairstories.com. And Rachel was kind enough to give you, the listeners, a coupon code for 15% off if you do decide to purchase her copywriting course and, make better words on your website. The coupon code is beginner15. Again, use that. You're going to get 15% off and save even more on what is, an incredible value for what it is that she delivers. So again, you can find that at greenchairstories.com. That is it for this week. Again, I would love to hear your biggest takeaways from this episode. You can go ahead and share them in the Beginner Photography Podcast Facebook community, which you can find just by going to Facebook, searching Beginner Photography Podcast. You'll find it there. And that is it. Until next week, I want you to keep shooting. I want you to, click that shutter button. I want you to take more photos, and I want you to connect with somebody, whether it be the person in front of your camera or somebody online through the photos that you share. So that is it this week. Until next week, stay safe. Keep shooting. I love you all. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Beginner Photography Podcast. If you enjoy the show, consider leaving a review in iTunes. Keep shooting, and we'll see you next week.
You guys just moved across the country? Mm-hmm. So from where are you currently in Colorado, or did you move out of Colorado? You're in Colorado.
We lived in Colorado for 8 years, and then 2 years ago, we moved back to Pennsylvania, where I'm from. And then we moved back out here in March. So, yeah, it's been wild.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I bet. Yeah. And do you have children as well?
Yes, I have two.
Two. Are they young children?
Yes. I have a 2-year-old and a 10-month-old. They both
2-year-old and 10 months. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. That is not when you would think, hey, you know what? Let's pack up and put them in a car and let's move across the country.
Yeah, it's just my husband got a great job offer. He's from here, Colorado. I'm from Pennsylvania. And so he just got this fantastic offer out of nowhere. And we were just like, we weren't thinking about moving back, but I guess we'll talk about it. And COVID was just so, it was so wild. And we didn't get to see as much of my family as I wanted. And they live out in the country. I'm from Lancaster, which is like Amish country. And so it was like, we're not really close to them and we don't want to move closer. So we might as well just go back to Colorado.
Have you guys got a house or what's the deal?
We move in on Saturday.
Oh, so you guys moved without a house, found the house, and then had to go. Oh my God. Yeah. In one of like the craziest housing markets ever. Oh,
I can't even describe. We put an offer on a house, not the one we got, for $75,000 over asking price. And we were the eighth offer.
No way.
In line. Yeah. The winning bid was $125,000 over asking price.
What?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
It was insane. We were just like, we're never going to get a house. And then the next day we put an offer in and they accepted. We were like, how did that happen?
Yeah.
We were like, did we just
overpay for this house?
Yeah.
Are they the crazy ones?
Yeah, they were the crazy ones.
Wow. Well, congratulations. That's exciting.
Thank you. Thank you.